All right, we're back, the 2% podcast. We got a special episode for two reasons. We got a birthday episode, my boy.
Come on, boy now.
Boo. We got the birthday episode.
2-7.
So you know the birthday episode has always got a special guest. So today, I mean, I can't really, whatever I say ain't going to do it just for this this guest. This person has had a big impact on my life, Boo's life.
Facts.
Any black athlete or student that has come through Vanderbilt, this person has helped pave the way. Recently, most powerful woman in Nashville. I found out about that today. For a black woman AD in the SEC, 20 plus years at Vanderbilt.
Sheesh.
Women's basketball team captain and
keep going.
I'm sorry, hold on people, stay with me. Undergraduate, master's and graduate at Vanderbilt,
and doctorate, don't play,
and doctorate,
don't play,
come on now, and SEC tournament championship with the women's basketball team. But like I said, the list can go on and on and on. But Candace Lee, everybody.
Candace Lee. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for asking me. Yes. Thank you.
We appreciate that for real. You know, we do appreciate it.
I want to jump right into it.
Let's jump into it.
You know, so there was a thing that happened maybe a year or two ago.
Okay.
And it's on your chest right now. And so.
Oh, yeah.
What went into, because it was a big uproar in the community, on Twitter, Instagram, actually all over the place. What went into it? What was your take on it? Like, give us the whole spill on that.
So let's talk. First of all, I'm so proud of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
Yes.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of like what you represent, how you show up. I'm proud of y'all.
Thank you. And I really appreciate being here.
Love.
So let's talk about the logo. So this is very interesting. You know, typically, so one of the things I've learned, and I used to see it from a distance when David Williams was the athletic director. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really understand it until I got in the seat that no one is ever going to have as much information as you have. Okay. And there will always be opinions, and they're all, and you know, that's one of the things we love about sports, right? People are so interested in what we do. But I have learned that there's always more context and insight that you have. And I think one of the things that we could have done a better job with the logo rollout was provide more context.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think we should just own that and say that we could have done a better job with that. The other thing that I know is that having been on campus since I was 17, I've been through 3 logo rebrands.
Yeah.
And so what happens too is that the logo that you associate with your memory of Vanderbilt, you think that that's always been the logo.
Yeah.
That's just real, right?
I remember when we did the Star V, and I can't remember what year that was. I want to say it was like 07 or 08. Yeah. And I remember there had been all this research done, and it was like, well, there's very few organizations that have a star. And so the star would be good, and so we came up with Star V. And so people are like, it's iconic. I can't believe you're getting rid of it. And it had only been around for X number of years, but it's what people knew. Yeah. So depending on what your memory is, right? When I came to Vanderbilt, we did not have the Star V. And you know, I remember when that first change happened and me thinking like, oh, I can't believe, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But let me just say this. It was a very thoughtful process. And when we started out, the idea was not to change the logo.
Right.
So what's interesting is that, and let me first, like, I want to shout out our chancellor, Daniel Dearmeyer, because he is an advocate for Vanderbilt being excellent in everything. Mm-hmm. And that includes athletics. And he understands the power of athletics. And as the AD, you know, my job is only as good as the support that I have from the top. And he offered, I mean, just tremendous support for what we're doing. Okay. So I want to start because that's important to this story, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that he noticed when he got here, so he's like, you know, when we talk about who we are and we talk about our identity, he's like, you look at the seal. So y'all go look at your diplomas. and the seal on the diploma, that's one logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you look at the Star V, that's one logo. Then you look at the Vanderbilt University word mark, that's another logo. There's no synergy between those three.
That's true.
So if I put up a slide right now, and this is what we did with our student athletes and showed you, they're all different and there's no connection. So one of the things that Daniel said was, he said, well, what does this say about who we are? We don't know who we are. Are we three different things or are we one? So one of the things that we did, we started talking about, hey, so how would you articulate what the Vanderbilt identity is? It didn't start off talking about logos. It's just that when we start looking, well, what are the tangible expressions? We're like, oh, well, there's a bunch of different logos. Yeah. And if you walked around even our athletics facilities, if you go to the southeast entrance of Memorial, there is a fourth logo that sits right. It's actually right outside. If y'all was going into baseball,
yeah,
by the student entrance,
yes,
there is a big logo in the ground that is not even an approved logo. And when we walked around and we looked across the university, there were like 9 or 10 different logos. Okay, so one of the things is, man, well, shouldn't we just have one? We're one Vanderbilt. We're all doing the same thing. So this is what I want to say about this V. Mm. So we did some research, even hired a company to help us go back and look at all the logos that Vanderbilt has ever had. And this is actually one that's, it's like 99% similar to one we've already had, because history tends to repeat itself, right? The thing that's special about this V is that this is now the same V that is in the Vanderbilt word mark. This is derived from the same V that is in the new university seal that's on the diplomas. And when the chancellor is at commencement and he's wearing his big, like, Flavor Flav medallion, it's the same V that's on there.
Yeah.
This is important to me as the athletic director that whether it is the athletics version of the V or it's the V that you get when you got your diploma, we're all the same and we're all worthy of the Vanderbilt brand. And athletics is not separate. Athletics is a part of it. So Vanderbilt is supposed to be great, and we are too, because we're a part of it. And so I know that other people maybe didn't understand, but what it said to me is that, oh, it's so important to y'all that we be a part of it. Well, we can't do what we want to do. I mean, like, you know, I'm going to tell y'all something. You know, how many years when y'all were in school did you hear, man, did you say or hear that we need priority registration?
Heard it a lot. I probably didn't say it, but
I
heard it a lot.
And you certainly would have loved if you had it.
Come on now.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we have it now.
Ooh.
Right? And I don't know if y'all knew that, but we have it now. And the reason why we have it is because academically we have support, because people say, man, student athletes, there are certain things that student athletes need so that they can commit fully to their craft.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also excel in the classroom, right?
Amen.
And they are not different from the concessions that other groups might need, right? Because we're all Vanderbilt. People might not think that's connected, but it is. Because to be able to have support to do things like that, everybody has to be operating on one accord. That's what this V means to me. Mm. And so now listen. So a lot of people didn't like it. I can honestly tell you, I looked at it at first and I thought, I know what it represents, but gosh, I got to get used to it.
I got to get used to it, right?
I've been thinking about the Star V. So we did all these different iterations. So there are, you know, there is a Star V version of this.
Okay.
It can be on top of the star. It can be inside the star. What I noticed, and I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but I noticed that when people saw this V, Two times when they saw the white V on the gold helmet for football, and then when they saw that V, kind of that monochromatic V in the turf in Hawkins, everybody was like, oh, that's kind of nice. But it's like anything else, change is hard. But what I want people to focus on, don't worry about the process and don't worry about the fact that maybe we didn't do a great job of, I'll own that and we'll own that. What the V represents is that we're all in and we're invested. And that's what everybody who is a Commodore deserves.
That's some contest for you right there, people.
It's important, right? And we need to do a better job. And I don't always get the luxury of providing all the context, right? You know, you don't control every single lever, but what I do know is I would do it again and again and again and again if it means that we're gonna get we're going to get the support that we need so that I can ensure that our student athletes have everything they need to succeed. That's my job, right? Mm-hmm. To clear those roadblocks so that our coaches have what they need, and so that our student athletes will have what they need.
Yeah.
So long way of saying, anchor down. Nah, I'm proud of this. Like, yeah. It was painful at times, but I'm proud of it.
We on the other side now.
Mm-hmm, we are. Yeah. We are.
Transition a little bit. You mentioned a little bit about David Williams. Yeah. I want to.
R.I.P. The man.
You know, he was very instrumental in just me getting into Vanderbilt. Yeah. You know, what did you see from him? From a leadership perspective, that he never said or verbalized, but you just watched and observed. Mm. I'm like, okay, I see that. I see this. Then I can now implement this into my leadership style.
So I think y'all know this too, but he is so important to me. And I have just now gotten to the point where I can talk about him without getting real emotional. Mm-hmm. It might still happen today, but because I think I'm starting to shift from grief to just gratitude.
Yeah,
right.
Got you. Mm-hmm.
And that's a journey. But you know, David, he gave me an opportunity to be his intern, and that's how I got into the athletics department, and truly came off the basketball court into a 1-year internship. That with no guarantees, and then he hired me full time, and then, you know, that's how I got in the door.
Yeah,
and I learned so much from him. I mean, honestly, I probably talked to David every day, every day until he passed. I promise. I mean, I know 6 times a week. It probably was more like minimum. The only time that I didn't talk to David in consecutive days is when I got married and went on my honeymoon. And I was gone for like a week. But other than that, man, I was interacting with David every single day. And so I say that because I had an opportunity and he afforded me access to him.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it was like you said, it wasn't anything that he verbalized. I just got a chance to sit and witness and learn and absorb. And I didn't know a lot, but was smart enough to know that I was around somebody that was great and somebody that was transformative. And so and having the chance to see him when he was vulnerable and in his authentic self is just something. It's a blessing and it's a gift that I'll never take for granted. I learned a lot of things. One, I used to laugh because David always demonstrated how important family was. And family wasn't always, it first and foremost, was his biological family, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just that. It was also the people like y'all who he cared for deeply, right? He always put family first. So we could be in the middle of what is a high stakes, very important business meeting.
Yeah.
And his phone might ring. And it could be a former law student from Ohio State. It could be his wife. And he was going to answer it. And I mean, David might go from, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And then that phone ring and he looked and he had this uncanny ability of being able to stop a sentence in the middle of it. Then get on the phone and be like, "Hey, what you doing?" His whole demeanor would change. And then he would come back and finish the sentence.
And pick up the sentence.
And he might be on that call for 30 minutes and we just sitting there. Right. And it was a beautiful thing to see, because what I learned from that is that there's nothing more important than family.
Yes.
There's nothing more important than that.
Yeah.
It don't matter what's going on. You know, keep it in its proper place.
Yeah.
Yes.
Keep it in its proper place. So that's one. And it did not matter when you needed David. It could be 10:45 at night or 5:00 in the morning. So I learned that. And he was always going to be there for you. I learned the importance of, you know, if you're going to do your best and give yourself the best opportunity to succeed, you got to show up as your authentic self. And he was always who he was. You know, I've always considered David a trailblazer. But, you know, David was rocking Nikes with suits before people thought that was cool.
Hey,
and now,
it's a thing now.
Everybody got the dunks on. Yeah. He was doing that before. But that's his style. He liked it. He didn't care what you thought about it.
Traditional for AD.
Exactly.
Especially back then.
Like, especially back then, right? Mm-hmm. So you might go into David's office and he listening to Motown. And he got his jacket on and his Nikes but he was himself. I learned so much about him and where he came from, and he loved where he came from. He loved how his past informed what he was doing today. And he never ever forgot what he was doing here. And I saw that, right? Because as a leader, no matter what is going on, and there will be all these external things that are pulling at you, these internal things that are pulling at you, you cannot lose sight of your purpose.
Yeah.
You cannot lose sight of your purpose. And he never did. And I appreciate that. And whether you agreed with it or not, that man was focused on doing what he thought was going to have an impact. And I don't know how you can't respect that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You have to.
And so I take great pride in having had the chance to just be along for the ride with him.
Yeah.
And he is a giant. Mm-hmm. And I hope, you know, that's one of the things that it's hard for me, because he wanted me to have this job so bad. Mm-hmm. He wanted it for me so bad. He wanted it before I knew that I wanted it. He wanted me. He felt like I should be leading a department. I mean, he would just push me. I finally started interviewing, and I turned down a couple opportunities because I wanted to keep learning from David.
So turn down opportunities at Vandy or other places?
Other places.
Other places. Okay.
And it's funny because people are like, oh, you've been at Vanderbilt your whole adult life. And I've been here because I've chosen to be.
Yeah. Right.
And there were probably three times where I came close to leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But each time I knew that, you know, I certainly didn't know what God had in store, but I knew that it was really special to have the chance to learn from David. Yeah. And I knew that it would be clear to me when it was time to go. Mm-hmm. And didn't know that I was going to become the AD. Any of that. Didn't even plan for that. But the other thing that I learned from him about leadership is that he saw something in me before I saw it in myself. Sometimes you have to do that for people. You have to give, you have to speak into their life, and you have to show them what is possible
before they can.
I think that's a part of being a good coach. Yeah.
That's
well.
Right. That's right. Good coaches do it every day.
Yeah, especially for the freshmen that come in, you might have a sophomore, whatever it may be. Somebody like it's something there. I see something there. I'm gonna push you.
That's right.
Even if you might not like it.
Yeah.
Or you might be mad. I'm gonna push you.
I'm gonna push you.
I'm gonna challenge you.
That's right.
Number one, see how you're gonna respond.
That's right.
And number two, there's another level.
And then there's the other side of that too, right? So the good leader, the good coach, because y'all know, right? Corbs does this every single day, right? It's like the good coach will see it in you and articulate it and give you the tools and push you, but you have to be coachable and accept it.
Yes.
So on the flip side, you have to receive it.
Yes.
And you got to be willing to like be broken and be put back together again. You got to be willing to be humble. You got to be willing to go through it. It doesn't matter if it's potential that's never realized, because you're not open to being coached.
Because honestly, on the opposite side of that is you get a player or somebody who's on that side who can't receive it.
Right.
So now the mentor or coach
shuts down.
Maybe they don't want it.
Maybe they don't want it.
So I'm going to pull away.
That's right.
Pull back, yeah.
It becomes certain points where I can't say anything else to you.
Yeah.
That's when coaching stops.
And that's sad.
I think that's where we're at right now in like college, amateur sports right now. Everybody's afraid to get, I guess you could say, coached.
Right.
Because even Corbs, we have a clip and he was saying it like, you can only push yourself truly so far.
Right.
Like somebody else is going to push you and come in there and push you up the ledge, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And sometimes that is getting coached hard. That's him.
That's right.
He's really, it's not picking on you,
no.
but he's trying to dig deeper.
No.
And kids don't really take that. And so they jump schools and here and there. And it's like, man, you got to sit there, hear it, and go do it.
I mean, it's hard, right? It's hard because it breaks you down. It's humbling. I think a lot of times we say that we want it, but then when you realize what it is to go through, like you got to do it. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it.
Everybody can say it.
Everybody can say it. And honestly, and like, I agree with Corbs. If you could, like, there is only so far that you alone can go. And then you do need to be coached and pushed beyond that. Because if that wasn't the case, then we wouldn't need each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could just go and do it yourself, and you wouldn't need. I mean, if that was the case, you wouldn't.
Agree.
You know, and that's not true because we do need each other.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah.
No, but I guess let's backtrack a little bit and kind of. The 2% is just more about your journey to college. Mm-hmm. So what was your journey like getting to Vanderbilt in basketball and any other sports you did play growing up through high school, middle school, and whatnot?
You know, I'm 6'3", right? And I've been 6'3" since I was like 11.
Stop.
Like a long, long time. I was tall. It certainly felt that way.
Yeah.
Super tall. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like my whole life. And my parents were like, dear God, like, try a sport. You know? Yeah. I tried softball. Terrible at it. even did, like, ballet. Terrible at it. Too clumsy. Did all kinds of stuff. And my dad was like, you know, my dad is tall. He's 6'7", but he played football. Okay. Mm. My mom is 6 feet, but, like, she didn't have the chance to play sports. You know, I was having this conversation this morning with someone that you don't realize that, like, women have just not had opportunities for very long.
Yeah.
It has not been that long. You know, when you celebrate the 50th anniversary of Title IX last year, 50 years, I mean, that's not long,
no.
Right? So my mom, you know, just really didn't have that opportunity. Mm. But I was about to give up on extracurriculars. My dad said, just try basketball. Just try it. We'll see. And I think that I understand it now, but I think at the time they were like, I just want you to kind of, like, I love to read, and I was really an introvert and just like, and very
yourself,
like,
yeah.
Sort of, I loved school. I loved to read. Gotcha. I didn't really. And my father's a retired colonel in the military.
Okay.
And so we moved a lot. And so he was in the Army. And so that was another thing, is I was always a new kid.
Yeah.
So I just kind of was tough. More like to myself. And my dad finally says, listen, like, just try basketball. My parents are like, just try it. If you don't like it, like, okay. Yeah. Well, I show up, and it was a little rec league. It was at boys. There was no girls, like, rec team, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was 10 or 11 years old, and I was by far the tallest person there. And all the boys were like, oh, I bet she's good. And I was terrible, right? But they thought I was good. I was like, okay.
She's a hooper.
Oh, yeah, she's a hooper. And I thought, and then when we got out there, they were terrible, right? But I was tall, and everybody thought, like, you know, I could play. And it just did wonders for my confidence.
Okay.
And I think I started to understand what my parents wanted me to understand. It's like, you know, like, extend yourself a little bit and stretch yourself. And so then I started to actually invest in it and became decent, right? Mm-hmm. Decent enough to, you know, get recruited. Mm-hmm. And I went to high school in Madison, Alabama. So North Alabama. And, you know, everybody thought I was going to Alabama or Auburn, you know. I didn't want to go too far from home, and my junior year had a chance to come to elite camp at Vanderbilt and was offered a scholarship there. Mm. And for me, it checked all the boxes, right? It was in the SEC. It wasn't too far from home. Great academics. And it changed my life. You know, what I didn't know at the time was, having been, and I'm so grateful to have been a military kid, because I learned so much, right?
Discipline.
Now I'm really happy to have been a new kid all those times. But I came to Vanderbilt and put down some roots. Didn't even know, you know, that's what it was going to be. But it was like I got to be the reason why I moved,
right?
You know, and came here and put down some roots. And Vanderbilt has been just this. It's been a place that has challenged me. Basketball challenged me.
Okay.
You know, we were okay. My program was okay in high school, but got here and I was like, oh, good Lord.
It's a little different. Yeah.
It was, and they were really good. They had been to a Final Four in 93 or 94.
Okay.
I got here in 96. I mean, I ended up with bad knees and two medical redshirts, playing for 6 years. We went to the tournament 5 times. We went to Elite Eight twice. We won the SEC tournament. Like, at one point, you know, we were ranked number 2 in the country for most of the year. I mean, it was good.
Hold
good.
On. Hey,
I
hold
know
on.
All this.
Oh, don't let me educate y'all.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't really know. Hey, we was good. good now. Yeah, okay. Right? You're talking about playing in front of sellout crowds and Memorial, and it was incredible.
Was jumping.
It was incredible. What? That was when Tennessee was really good. Right?
So yeah.
Rest in peace, Pat Summitt, because she was just incredible. But I mean,
it was a time.
My parents laughed because there is this picture of me as a freshman on the floor with Shamiqua Holesclaw. And, you know, she was best player in the country and just incredible play to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so we're both going up in the air. She's shooting and I'm on defense. Now, I ain't block her shot, but it looks like it on the picture, right? I played like 2 minutes that game. But, you know, my parents like, we're so proud of you. Look at you on the right. And so, you know how it is when you get older. You start like, let me tell y'all about that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But my point is, it was incredible. And it was hard for me. Everybody was good. I had to work like twice as hard just to be strong enough and just to like put myself in position to try to contribute.
For sure.
But man, I learned some awesome lessons and I realized what I could do, right? Because basketball forced me to do things that I didn't even know I was capable of and to fight through pain that I didn't know could be that bad and to get to the other side. And y'all know this.
Yeah.
And so it changed my life. But that's how I got to Vanderbilt.
Gotcha. I think athletics provides us opportunities to experience adversity.
Yes.
All since you start playing all the way until you stop playing.
That's right.
And so when you get done playing and then life hits you with some other types of adversity, I know you're better equipped handle those situations more. I'm going to say more, but other people who might not have played sports or have dealt with that type of adversity, there is new to them.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's like, I've been 0 for 4.
Yes.
I've been 0 for 20.
I know.
Like, you understand what that feels like. The next day, you got to come back and do it again.
And then you come back and do it again.
And have the mindset of like, it's going to be different
today. That's right. Yeah.
And so like, you really get that in sports. Mm-hmm. And it helps you outside the arena, the football field, the court, whatever it may be.
That's right.
The track, you know, so that's a... thankful, you know, for sports.
Yeah. Corbs talks about it all the time. You learn, it's the best teacher for you.
That's right.
Yes.
You're not learning these lessons, or you're not being with a group of people, and you the whole racial injustice and all the things we've gone through the few years. Like, you look in locker rooms, like, ain't no problems in locker rooms. Uh-uh.
No.
Hey, there's no problems. Mm-hmm. And it's because you realize when you're going through something a group of people, I don't really care about it. We just trying to get through it. Hey, you doing something on the football field, y'all running suicides. You don't care. You just like, we got to get through this some way, somehow. And then you do those things and you're like, you just start building bonds with people. And then
The team is better for it. It's stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of separate from this conversation, but somebody might come in who didn't work out and go through those workouts with us, who didn't struggle with us. Yes. And they come in on the backside. It's like,
you ain't really going through it. That's real.
Yo, it is real.
It's 100%.
That is real.
It's a genuine feeling. It's not fake. Mm-mm. It's like, we cool, but
you don't know.
Yeah.
And since you don't know, zip it.
Don't talk on it.
Don't like you got to respect.
Yes.
The journey. You got to respect the struggle. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
And that is for real. And I think about that a lot of times with sports too, because sports can be so rewarding. It can create memories that you will cherish for life. Oh. It can be so unforgiving.
Oof.
And that's life. And you got to figure out how to find joy and peace despite what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how many times did you feel 100% prepared? You had a game plan.
Mm.
You didn't slept well. You fueled up.
Everything.
You ate. You did all the things.
I did my prep, my routine.
I visualized.
Took all the things.
Took care of my body.
And you couldn't have played worse.
Man.
Right? Or what about the time you skipped the steps?
Mm.
And you do well. You know you cheated the process.
And you did well. And you like.
And everybody like, yeah, you. Yeah. And you know you cheated the process.
Mm-hmm.
And you won.
Mm.
There are just so many. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
Or everybody knows that one teammate that you're like, boy, if don't nobody deserve to win, it's them.
Mm.
They deserve the best. And they like, you know, broke their such and such, lost their such
That's
and such. Everybody knows that because it can be unforgiving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or the people that I can't believe they're doing good. They don't deserve that. Hey, that's just life. It's powerful lessons, but it's just life.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
It's crazy. Yeah,
it is.
It is.
Speaking of, like, you know, sports give us it gives us competition. Mm-hmm. And very competitive individuals here. And like overly, it's like we compete in everything.
Yes.
It can be walking to the car, or we paper balls, we shooting just anything. Man. It's just
used to fight for the passenger seat
all day long,
every day.
And so it never goes away.
No.
And so now that you're no longer competing on the court, how do you compete in your role as AD? Like, what's that like? What's that competition like?
Yeah, I can definitely relate to, because if you're a competitor, you're a competitor in everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or you don't compartmentalize Not if you're a true competitor.
Yes.
You know, and so now I would tell you that I'm in competition with myself because I know that I owe it to myself to make sure I'm doing everything possible to reach my potential so that I can serve this place. Mm-hmm. So the competition is not really with other people. I don't have to be in competition with other people. I'm just in competition with me, you know? And so, and I'm holding myself to a really high standard. So that's feeding my soul.
Yes.
That's feeding that competitive spirit. And I'm also betting on us, right? So somebody asked me the other day in an interview, they were like, so yeah, like Vanderbilt's getting ready for, and I understood it was a very innocent question, and I appreciate the question, and it's a rational question, and it's like, man, so like y'all got to get ready for Texas and Oklahoma to come into the league, and I said, yeah, Texas and Oklahoma needs to get ready for us.
Yeah, I said, hold on now, player.
Texas and Oklahoma needs to get ready for us. And so, you know, the world is changing around us, right? Like, you know, in any given day you wake up, you don't know who's in what conference, you don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. Doesn't change what Vanderbilt's doing.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't change. The thing that I know and the thing that I'm betting on, and I believe with every fiber of my being, if Vanderbilt reaches this potential, everybody should be nervous about that.
That's true.
I heard.
Yes.
I did hear.
Very.
I think you made a comment about the media day this year with football, and you said there was a buzz about Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Because people, they realize that if Vanderbilt gets to that point that you're talking about, that nobody can compete.
It's gonna be dangerous.
With what we have to offer and what we can give students.
Yeah. And it's no disrespect to other people, because everybody should have their own unique roadmap to success. Mm. And I don't begrudge anybody. But what I do know is that what we have, it's not like anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's not. There is not another institution here that can say, oh, we're charter members of the SEC. We're in Nashville. We're in this hot, thriving, innovative growing city. We're the 13th best institution in the world in a community that cares and sees people and values people for who they are. Mm-hmm. There ain't another place that can say that. So. No. You know, I've challenged our staff. You know, historically, people have said, oh, you know, we're Vanderbilt, just trying to do more with less.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe at some point that was true. I don't want to hear that anymore. Mm. We're going to do more with enough. Mm. And it's my job to make sure we have enough. Mm-hmm. Right? If we have enough, people should be worried about us. They should. And the enough, right? It's the financial resources. Yeah. It's the facilities. It's the right people.
Get the right people in place so that they can get it
and
done.
So all of that is enough. It's that hope and that optimism. Somebody asked me recently, they're like, you know, every time I meet a Vanderbilt alum, man, y'all just on some different stuff, because, I mean, y'all love Vanderbilt. Y'all be like, you don't know if you ain't in it. And, you know, and I say, hey, it's real.
It's real.
Nah, it is. Because I know you can ask Boo, even in like just like professional baseball, like organizations, you go in and you have guys that are all from Vanderbilt, and everybody walks around, oh, y'all from Vanderbilt.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, and you don't even have to say anything.
They
bring it to you, and it's just like, clearly it's on your mind. So you're all right. Like, I didn't mention anything.
I didn't mention it.
I might walk different. Right. Yeah, I probably walk different because I'm from Vanderbilt, but I didn't say it. So no, there is that whole like aura and shit. I love
it. Yeah, love it.
I'm not gonna stop.
Y'all are very much a part of that legacy, because you look at what Corbs, you look at the Vandy boys, you look like I often use that as the template, right? Mm-hmm. So that's about finding the right person to lead, giving them the resources to support their vision, and then getting out the way. and watching how this this beautiful thing that emerges.
Yeah.
Right. And now everybody want to be a Vandy boy. Yeah. Right. Yes. Whether you played here or not, everybody will, because they understand, and there is this mystique about it. But you all know it's not magical. Mm-mm. It's built from the ground up. It's built from the ground up, and it is work.
It's not for everybody.
It's not for everybody.
They want it, but
everybody wants that final product. Yeah. But it's like, y'all don't know what was done to get that final product.
It's been people who have come to Vanderbilt, and after the first meeting, they're not there for the second meeting.
That's right.
And it's been people who have gone through maybe 1 or 2 weeks of workouts. You know, I don't see him anymore. You come into the classroom and you see an empty seat and a binder.
Yeah.
Right there. I'm like, yo,
it's like, week two. And you're like, huh?
And then Corey's like, well, he'll address it. It's like, don't treat him any differently.
That's
you
right.
still talk to him the same.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's still your friend.
Right.
You know, he decided not to pursue other opportunities.
That's right.
You know.
And we're going to treat that with dignity, but the reality is you can't have 1 foot in and 1 foot out.
Mm-mm.
That's disrespectful to the people that have 2 feet in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
it's all or nothing.
And he's gotten rid of people.
Right.
Because of that.
Because of that exact same reason. It's been, you know, maybe it was late October, November.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
he's calling people in.
Right.
And the people he's calling in, questioning their commitment
their
level.
Commitment,
like,
right.
are you here?
Right.
Because if you're not here, then it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're just going to move on without you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that's another, you know, as a leader, or especially when you're trying to create a culture of excellence, especially at the beginning, but I think it's probably true, there are just certain things you cannot tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think if you're talking about trying to build something with sustainable success, you can't tolerate people who are not on board.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, it doesn't mean you got to make anybody feel bad. You don't have to disrespect. In fact, you better execute it with dignity.
Yes.
You know, and care. But you can't tolerate if people, not when you're trying to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Not when you're trying to transform a thing.
You feel like it's hard to find people that have that same commitment level to a vision like you have?
I would not say it's hard to find people. I mean, it's gotta be the right people.
Okay.
I do think there are a lot of people that have enthusiasm, and I think that it has been, you know, I'm hiring right now. So I had hired 2 deputy athletic directors 3 years ago, right when I was starting.
Mm-hmm.
And they both now are athletic directors at other schools. And so I'm proud of them both. I'm so happy for them both. And now it's been interesting because the level of interest as I'm replacing them, it's like off the charts.
Yeah.
But I think that's a testimony to everything that we're all doing, you know, to raise like the brand of Vanderbilt Athletics, and everybody plays a role in that. And so so it's not a shortage of interest, but it's gotta be the right people.
Yeah.
You know, who are in alignment with our values, what I'm going to say, but I told our staff the other day, we had a department-wide staff meeting last week as classes were starting, or I've been on the road, whatever day, it was recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I told them, I said, sometimes I feel sorry for you. I mean, I love everybody in here, all 215 of you. Yeah. Love everybody in here, so happy about what we're doing. But sometimes I feel sorry for y'all because you work for an athletic director who loves this place so much that she is going to pour her heart and soul in ensuring that for the time that I have the privilege to sit in this seat, that we are going to give Vanderbilt every opportunity to succeed. And that is so important to me. And it is not just a job, it is a lifestyle.
Yes.
And you go ask my husband, he'll say, we all in, you know? And I'm not saying that I don't have proper perspective, right? Like, I was interviewing a candidate this morning and my phone rang because my grandmother is in the hospital. She's 93 years young and but she's struggling right now. And I was like, time out. Like, and this man was in the middle of a very heartfelt, I said, can you hold on for a second? No, you have to hold on for a second because I got to make sure my grandma, right? You know, and it's like, my family's going to come first.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. You know, I got an awesome husband. I got a 25-year-old son. And like, I got awesome parents. They were here last weekend. They'll be here this week, but family comes first. And then us taking care of each other. That's the most important thing, whether that's my family or the people I'm responsible for or to. But so I'm gonna keep it in its proper place. Mm-hmm. But once we get past that, like, I love Vanderbilt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for the time that I'm here, like, you gotta love it too.
Yes.
And if you don't love it too, it's cool. Like, it's, you ain't gotta be upset. Yeah, it just ain't for you. Yeah. It's just not for you. And it is, you know, I have, man, those are some tough conversations, especially when it's people that you care about and that you love.
You know, I was going to ask about that later. The hiring process of getting the right coach to take on a role, and God forbid that this coach doesn't necessarily get the job done in a certain amount of time.
Sure.
And over those years that you with this coach, like, obviously you get close to them.
That's right.
You know their family, you know their kid, like, you know the, like, you know these people, like, you're close to them, you care about them.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's time for a different person to come in.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's a, I know it has that's to be hard.
It's hard. You know, my husband told me that, so David Williams and I'll start this here. David Williams and I would talk about this a lot, because he would say, so y'all remember, he was a storyteller.
Yes.
He always had great stories, mm-hmm, and great context. And he would always tell me these stories about being at Ohio State. And when he worked at Ohio State, athletics reported up to him. He was in a vice president role and the athletic director reported up to him. He'd tell me all these stories. And when they first moved there, he said they found this house they loved in Columbus. Loved this house. Miss Gail, his wife, fell in love with this house. And they were really close to buying it. And then one of the, like, it was a football coach or basketball coach or somebody, walked outside, lived next door. He said, no, we can't buy this house because one day I might have to let him go. Mm-hmm. And I used to ask him about that, and I'm like, well, why does it matter though if you live next door? I mean, and he's like, Candace, I just know myself, and that would just be harder for me to do.
Yeah.
And you know, that's another thing I learned from, right, the importance of self-awareness. And you know, there's only a couple ways you can go here. You can be the kind of athletic director that's just not going to really have personal relationships, or kind of be at arm's length with your coaches, because maybe that makes it a little easier if you need to be objective. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to be relationship oriented, but you're going to know that when it comes time to do what you think is right for the university, you got to trust yourself to do it. Yes. And that's where I am.
Okay.
And I know that I knew that I could not be myself. I mean, the relationship, that relationship between AD and head coach is paramount to me. Mm-hmm. And I spend a lot of time cultivating those relationships, because these head coaches, like, I know that their positions are hard and it's lonely. And if nobody else understands, I want them to know that I do. And I'm here for them. But it is hard.
Yes, I'm sure.
It is so, so, so hard. And so, you know, I have in the 3 years hired 5 new head coaches. And the first change that I made was Derek Mason.
Yes.
And I had been the football sport administrator for, I mean, I think the whole time he was here, but certainly for most of it. Mm-hmm. And I have such respect for him.
Good dude.
That's my guy.
Good dude.
Real good guy.
And I ultimately decided that it was time for a number of reasons. And thinking about the trajectory of the football program, and there were a lot of factors that went into that. But it was, so you know, externally people have a million opinions.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to me, if you don't care about people and you can easily just go in and deliver some news like that. And I mean, you probably shouldn't be in the seat.
Nah.
Right? Because you don't have a heart to be in the seat. Mm-hmm. But you still have to make the decisions that you think are right. And I felt like, number one, the relationship that Derek and I have is very strong because we are great friends. And I love that dude. I just talked to him last week. He comes to the office all the time. He's just good people.
Yeah.
But my husband told me, so when I have my process that I go through and to make decisions. And when I made the decision, I'm like, all right, I gotta talk to coach. And it was just a rough week for me. I couldn't sleep. It was hard.
It was hard. I know it's in your gut.
It was in my gut. It was and my husband said to me, he said, listen, so this is not gonna be the first nor the last time, right? Here's what you gotta. And I talked to my parents about it. They said the same thing. But my husband said, listen, you just got to know that when you make decisions like this, it's always going to be hard for you. Right? So just go through your process. It's going to be hard for you, but be yourself. Feel the emotions. It's just going to be hard for you, though. That's just what it is. Yeah. And I know that that's a simple thing, but I was like, for whatever reason, that hit me. And I was like, yeah.
Kind of puts you at peace.
It put me at peace. I'm going to feel all the feelings. But the thing that I will always hold myself accountable to is doing what is best for Vanderbilt. I have yet to make a decision that was comfortable for me, to be honest with you. But that's not what they pay me for.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if I can enjoy it along the way, great.
Yeah.
But that's not what it's about. Right. It's about like doing what is best for this place. Even if it hurts Candace's feelings or even if it's hard or, you know, that's where you got to have the courage to do what you think is right.
Yeah.
And I'll always do what I think is right. It's just going to hurt. Mm-hmm. At times it's going to hurt. And that hurt. It was hard.
I bet.
You know, it was hard, but it hasn't gotten any easier. And I don't think it ever will. No. And if it ever does, and that's when I know that it's time to do something different.
Yeah.
You know?
That's definitely.
Yeah.
You gave I heard through the grapevine.
Yep.
You know, every year we do it's an athletic meeting in Willis. My last 2 years, 3 years, it was held in the indoor facility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And every athlete, all the sports, and then you get to talk to see people that you probably not gonna see until the next time.
Until the next meeting.
Until the next meeting. It's like, I didn't know you worked here.
Right.
And so everybody comes up one by one, introduce themselves, what they do, and just, you know,
their
talk.
Role.
Right. And so I heard that you gave a speech and you had a couple people ready to run through a wall. You know, so if you can.
Oh, that's nice that y'all heard that.
They felt that in their soul.
And
they're not even playing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, give us a little taste or a little overarching message.
Said, y'all should have been there.
Of basically the gist of the message.
You know. Well, one, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. My goal was to kick off the year and just welcome everybody in.
Oh, you kicked
and
it
try
off.
To set a tone. Mm-hmm. But I think the gist is it's honestly a lot of what we've been talking about. But, mm-hmm. you know, so one of the things that I say, the staff probably getting tired of me saying it, but I'm like, we all chose Vanderbilt. Right? You're not here as a hostage.
Yeah.
So if you're here, then this place deserves your all. Mm. It's super simple.
Yeah, it is.
It's actually very, very simple. And as I tell recruits, and I try to meet with every recruit that comes through here if I can, we are going to make history here, with or without you. Mm. Might as well be with you.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do it. We're going to do things that have never been done. And that everybody deserves to be a part of, right? You can get on board or not, but this train is moving. It's moving. Mm. The thing that I can tell you is that you'll get all of me, mm-hmm. all of it. And so I'm never going to ask you to do something I haven't done. I'm never going to ask more of you than I'm willing to give. But you chose Vanderbilt, and you should do it every single day, every single day. And I mean, I know that we got a chance to be, and again, it's no disrespect, but we got a chance to do that. I never, ever, ever, and I got emotional talking in the meeting because I'm like, I never thought that I would see the day where there'd be 73 shovels in the ground and there'd be such excitement and we'd be able to actually deliver on the promise that we made. Man, I'm thinking, this ain't just about me. I'm thinking about David Williams. There were so many things that he wanted to do, but there were constraints beyond his control.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought that they know that they knew, but they didn't. I'm talking about doing it for him.
Yeah.
I'm talking about doing it for Perry Wallace, right? Mm-hmm. Perry Wallace, who comes here in 19, I think in 66, I sometimes get confused if it was 66 or 67, but comes here as the first black basketball player. Right here from Nashville and comes here and has a really, really tough experience.
Mm-hmm.
But if Perry Wallace does not come here and endure, then there ain't no us.
Mm-mm. Oh, no, no.
There is no us. I'm talking about making the most of this opportunity for people like that.
Yeah.
How could you not get excited about that? Mm. And if you're not excited, this ain't the place for you. Mm-hmm. Not trying to threaten anybody, but David used to come in and be like, and if you want to tell me about what they got in Florida, go to Florida. Like he was saying. necessarily saying like that, but same message. Same message, right? Mm-hmm. Like, man, Vanderbilt wasn't even created for us. Mm. We were not in people's mind when Vanderbilt opened in 1873. There was not anybody that looked like us that was getting to sit in classrooms then. Okay, girls weren't even allowed to formally enroll as students. So I can tell you Candace Lee was not on their mind, but y'all weren't either.
Yeah.
And now fast forward to today, and we are in this space with the opportunity to have it. How can you not get excited about that? How can you not? If you can't, again, it ain't for you.
Yeah, you're not wired. You're not wired right.
You're not wired right.
You get me.
You know?
I'm feeling it.
But that was a gist.
Yeah, I felt it.
That was a gist. You
touched on a couple things, but like, how do you, I guess, almost deal with being in the position where you know people don't have all the information and you have to do things that you know you might get criticized for
but they'll never know why
you're making that decision.
And you said it a little bit.
Yep.
In terms of you can relate to the head coaches because you know how lonely it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you are a head coach in your own right.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure it is lonely. So
yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So I would say, so my mom always talks about there are hazards that come with every job.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what the job. It doesn't matter the level. Doesn't matter the... And she's like, part of, you know, being successful in the job is you just have to own those, right? So part of it is just accepting that there are things, right? It's going to be lonely. But that doesn't mean I don't have wonderful people around me who care for me. It's not that. But there are a lot of things I just don't... I'm not at liberty to share.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to me how I show up for my team. So I have to fill their cup so they can't fill mine. So my cup's got to get filled before I get here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to me. And so it was really hard at first. So number one, I just didn't know that there were so many people paying attention to what you were doing. I didn't realize it. I didn't understand it. And the criticism, I thought... And I had to learn that it's like, well, like, if somebody that doesn't know you says something about you, like, they don't know you. It ain't personal.
Yeah.
It's a hazard of the job. It comes with the role. It comes with the role. And I wouldn't say that that's easy, but I just understand that that's just part of it. So I limit some of my interaction with some of just the, like, I don't spend, you know, all day on Twitter. I don't do that. You know, I've tried to eliminate all distractions because what I've come to learn is that noise can be disguised a lot of different ways. But if it's noise, then it's, you know, it's detracting you from purpose. So I try to minimize as much noise as I can.
Gotcha.
It's hard, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it is hard, but I am just motivated by, I'm like, Candace, like, there are things... That is hard. There are things that you know that other people that you can't say or that you won't say. And you just got to be okay with it. Yeah. You just got to be okay with it. But I would say that for every criticism, I have felt a lot of love and support. And I know who I am.
Yeah.
And if I'm not your cup of tea, then, you know, that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that when I lay down, I always know that, like, I have done the best I can do. Doesn't mean I don't have a lot of growing. There's a lot of things I've done, right? I've gotten an executive coach. That's been a really important resource for me because she's a confidential resource.
Okay.
So I can talk about things that I really am not, again, can't talk about in other places and other spaces. She's challenged me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be a good coach if you can't be coached, right? We've talked about that. And so... She's just helped me understand again, right? I had to go from being operational to stepping up and being the one who sets the vision and then empowers others to actually execute it. And man, early on, man, I heard some stuff, man. I mean, there were people who were saying things like, I heard she got Malcolm Turner fired. And I heard, and I'm like, these people don't know me because I would never do that. Yeah, and so yeah. I was really hurt by things that I heard early on. Or people who would say things like, she's just a diversity hire.
Yeah.
And I heard that.
Wow.
Or I heard that, you know, and she didn't even get a job at such and such again. And I mean, I heard stuff that was, it was so far from the truth that it was almost laughable.
Yeah.
But it hurt my feelings at the beginning.
You read it and you see, like, you feel it.
And I'm like, man, that ain't even me. It's not even true. Mm. And my husband was really hurt. My mom has gone to war with people.
And she is. Hey,
mama right there. You know,
and
I finally was like, you know what, y'all, this stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This stuff doesn't matter. Like, you know who you are. And you mess around and get distracted by those people. And then you'll forget about the ones who support you. And most importantly, the ones who you were serving. So I'm a work in progress on that because it's hard. Mm-hmm. But I really love what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I love what we're doing.
It's coming together.
Yeah.
When you first got the role, mm-hmm. was there any imposter syndrome at all? Like,
yeah.
Am I fit for this? Like, can I really do this job?
Yeah. I still, there are still moments where I deal with it.
Yeah.
Used to be days where I dealt with it.
Mm.
And now it's not days anymore. And not because it's more because, I'm like, Candace, you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So part of it is that you have to tell yourself, you know, your emotions can betray you. And your thoughts can betray you.
Yeah.
And so part of that is having the maturity to like capture those thoughts and like throw them out when they don't serve you. And so I've been working really hard at that. I think the imposter syndrome is both as a woman. I think something, you know, this is a male dominated space. And so there are now two women in the SEC, but for a long time there was just me for a long time during my tenure, there was just me. And you walk into these spaces and you know, when spaces aren't created with you in mind per se, you start to question. And I will say, I mean, what I've come to understand is that everybody's just trying to figure it out. And I earned the right to be here. And sometimes mm-hmm. I have to remind myself of that. Right. Yeah. Sometimes I have to remind myself of that. But the imposter syndrome, I'm doing a better job now of when it does come out. I don't let it linger. It still mm-hmm. comes.
Yeah.
But yeah. I try not to dwell on it.
And I think Tony mentioned it. He said it in a different light, but he was like, I would type my questions out in class before mm-hmm. I would even say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for you, it's like, how does it, you said you're a woman in a male sport, mm-hmm. in a male dominated field mm-hmm. and being black. Like, mm-hmm. how does that, there's almost like a burden. Cause I know for us, it's like being black in baseball. It's like, you're not just doing it for yourself. You're mm-hmm. doing it for the next generation coming up so that mm-hmm. they can have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, it's you're doing it on two fields now.
Right.
How is trying to deal with all that as well? Like that, I can't.
You
got to
perform.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's like the next person. The door's going to close, mm-hmm. right? It's so interesting because in the Power Five, right, there are three black women who are leading athletic departments. And they deserve to be shouted out, right?
Yeah.
So Carla Williams, who's at the University of Virginia, who was at Vanderbilt at one point, and she is incredible. She's an incredible friend. She's a mentor to me. She is a phenomenal leader. So she got her job in 2017. She was the first.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was the second. And then Nina King at Duke became the third.
Okay.
And those were, and she too, man, Nina is awesome. I too count her as a great friend and colleague and leader. And so we finally, you know, it like COVID kind of disrupted everybody. Well, we were in the same place at the same time. So it was like last year in Kansas City at this conference. And so we were texting each other and I said, I'm coming, y'all, I'm coming. I threw my stuff in the room and we got on the escalator to go up to the registration floor. And I'm telling you, maybe I'm naive, but I did not know people were gonna respond the way that, and you know, that conference had a lot of young women who are aspiring to be ADs and learning about the business. Oh my God. I forgot what they called it, the trio, I think. And people wanted to take pictures, and I was...
Y'all popping.
I was blown. I was like, what in the world? And all we were trying to do was find a quiet space to talk, right? But it hit me in that moment
mm-hmm.
that, oh man, I mean, number one is so important that people see it so that people know that they can be it, right? We know how important representation is. But that, you know, we all just trying to figure it out. And but what we represented to other people, it was just like incredibly humbling. And each of these women, I mean, you're talking about women who can run anything. Yeah. I mean, smart and talented and just highly competent and has a heart for this work. And I just, everybody wants to talk about being the first. I appreciate it. But it only matters if there's a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh.
Yes,
exactly. I mean, you know, and so, yeah, you got to perform. Mm-hmm. You know, you got, and so I do feel, I mean, I'm gonna hold myself to a high standard, but I also feel like I don't have the luxury to do otherwise anyway.
Mm-mm. No,
you
we don't,
you know. So one of the things that, so Carla and Nina and I have on our desk, on each of our desks, it's a angel. There's this company, Willow Tree, makes these angels. There's this black angel, and it's a woman. She's got her hands up like this, and she's got like kinky hair. It's like you look at it and you know she's a black woman, right? She got some great hair, and her arms are raised, and it's called Courageous Joy. And the little thing that came with it said, you know, it's about celebrating black women who have the courage to step into spaces. Right. And spaces where they need healing and peace and motivation. And so I saw this and I'm like, y'all, we each got to have one of these, man, because this is our story. So I sent one to the two of them and we each put them on our desk and we're texting each other. And we had. Yeah. And so the thing is, like, since Nina is the newest, whenever there's a fourth woman, she's going to send the next one, right? Okay. And we're going to make sure that we all have this. And the thing is, sometimes I look at it, one, I look at it for inspiration. Another thing, it connects me with these women. But sometimes I'm like, dang, when are we going to get to send one?
Mm.
Ooh,
when are we going to get to do it? Yeah. You know, I've had my job for 3 years. Nina's had hers for two. Carla's had hers for six. Yeah. When are we going to be able to send another one? You know, and listen, there's amazing men, women of all ethnicities who deserve jobs. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying that right now, speaking as a black woman, right, like we're very far from status quo.
Yeah.
And so our opportunities have been very limited. And we deserve these opportunities.
1,000%.
We deserve opportunities to lead. You know? Yeah. And so it's a lot of pressure. Sometimes I feel it from sometimes you feel it from, I should say, I put the pressure on myself. It's a lot of love, though. Yeah. Like, man, there's some women that work in our dining hall in the Hendrix room that have been in there since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And, man, when I got the job, I'm thinking of two of them out. In particular. Just tears.
I know they cry.
But, like, when you think about what it represents, and, like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know? That's awesome.
Yeah. I got one more.
Yeah.
With this new NIL space that's going on.
Yeah.
How what's Venable doing? What's your mindset on it? I'm looking at baseball particularly.
Yeah.
You get guys who get a certain amount of money to go play at this school and then they do win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. If Vandy doesn't do this, there might be might become in the middle.
Yeah.
Might be in the middle of the pack. Right, because it does take talent.
Absolutely.
1,000%. So all these talented guys are now, okay, they're giving me this.
Yeah. That's right.
But Vanderbilt might want to stick to what Vanderbilt does. So, okay, well, I'm going to go. This money can help change my family.
Yeah.
And now.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, what's Venable's mindset, and I guess what's the move going forward for the NIL stuff?
Yeah, so I'll start by saying you're not going to be successful as an athletic department if you don't have NIL.
Yeah,
just point blank, you're not. Mm. You know, so part of what we have to do, we can be true to who we are and still modernize our approach.
Yes,
and not be afraid to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and not be afraid to do that. So I'm going to tell you what. So number one, I believe in NIL. And, you know, years ago, I was a compliance director at Vanderbilt, right? Mm-hmm. There were so many things that were considered illegal that I just thought were so silly, right? Mm-hmm. We had a men's basketball player who y'all would know him if I said his name. Super talented. Everybody would know him. Super talented. Took a class over at the Blair School of Music. The professor was like, man, this dude is so talented. I'm getting ready to put a CD out. I want this guy on my CD. And we couldn't even put his real name on the CD.
Dang.
Because he could not profit off his athletics reputation or his name. Now, of course, that wouldn't be a thing now, but it was a thing then.
Yeah.
I remember at the time when I was in compliance, there was a football player in this league who struggled with literacy, got to the school, really worked on his reading, turned around and wrote a children's book, and couldn't profit off of that. I mean, it was part of his story.
Come on,
it was an incredible story. Yeah. So come on, that's stupid, right? Yeah. And now we don't have to worry about things like that. I believe this is America, and if you can profit off your name, your image, and your likeness, you should be able to.
It's a capitalist country.
Exactly. So I got no problem with that. Where I think the struggle has been is when NIL has turned into pay for play. So listen, NIL is supposed to be, I am going to use my name to raise awareness about a thing, and then you're going to pay me for that.
Yes.
I love Buffalo Wild Wings, so then we gonna do it, right? You know, or I love whatever, we go. This idea of I'm gonna offer you millions of dollars to come to my school before you've stepped on the campus. That's what I don't like, but that is a result of us not enforcing NIL rules, and you put that in tandem with the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And it's just problematic, right? Yeah. That doesn't have anything to do with NIL in and of itself. Okay.
Yeah.
So number one, so there's a lot of issues around NIL because right now people are just operating under their state law. And so anytime you have a bunch of different laws, you're not going to have, like, there's going to be competitive advantages and disadvantages, right? Because there's no consistency. So what we need is some consistency across the board. That's what we need in terms of regulation for the industry. But what Vanderbilt is doing, we have a collective. We did have two collectives. They've now merged into one, the Anchor Impact Fund.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm out raising money and, you know, trying to raise a lot of money so we can get all these buildings built, I am constantly talking about the Anchor Impact Fund because if you want to support Vanderbilt student athletes, like, NIL is an important way to do it. It's an important way to do it. And so a lot of times I'm like, hey, really appreciate this gift. And this gift is very powerful. You might want to consider taking 10 or 15% and giving it to the Anchor Impact Fund. That is our collective that is helping to curate these NIL opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a number of student athletes. I mean, NIL has been good to Vanderbilt student athletes. And it should be, and it will continue to be that. But we do need some national regulation. But I promise you, like, we can't put our head in the sand on this, and we're not going to do that, right? So, you know, what I want is, if you want Vanderbilt, then NIL is not going to be the reason why you don't come.
That's true.
I don't want you to just come because of NIL. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
But it's going to be part of the experience. It has to be, and it should be.
Yeah.
And so where we want to pour our resources in to making sure when you get that money, you can manage it and you do what's best for you.
Right.
It's your money, but I want to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want you to be thoughtful about the brands that you want to associate with because you are a brand.
Yeah.
Mm.
You are a brand. Your reputation is a brand. Your name is a brand. So who you want to be connected with? And if it's Hooters, fine. You know, whatever, right? I had this conversation with a student athlete. Whatever it is, it's fine. But I want you to feel empowered to enter into an agreement that you feel good about.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard horror stories, thankfully not at Vanderbilt, of some awful agreements where student athletes are turning over like percentage of their future earnings.
Oh yeah. I've heard about it.
I want you to feel empowered to make a decision that's great for you and your family and your right?
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to give you all the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And man, if you got a strong brand, you can make some money.
Yeah.
And you should.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have student athletes making real money.
Good.
Right. So, I think, you know, I think people have perceptions because we don't lead with that.
No.
Because that ain't the best thing that we have. Mm-hmm. But it's a great feature. But like, you know, what we have is pretty special.
Right.
But we're trying to compete at the highest level. So you have to have NIL to do that. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, so I hope that answered the question. Yeah,
more than answered the question.
No, that definitely answered it. It is unfortunate that you, like you said at the end, like people are just out there looking for that. Yeah. But, and I don't think, and you said Vanderbilt has so much to offer. That's not something that they throw out there, and so kids are like, oh well, they're not talking about it, so do they not have it? And
yeah,
it's like,
right.
No, that's not the case.
So every time I be with a crew, I'm like, come on, let's talk about it.
Yeah,
and we got it, and what, you know, what's going on? What I mean,
let's talk.
Yeah, let's go.
What you want to know?
You know. And that's so real. You know, I just think, too, just the world is changing, right? So as you think about, there's been such a. I think part of what's happening here, and y'all know this, right? There is a social justice thread that runs through this whole conversation, right? Because when you look at how a lot of the money, you know, you look at football and men's basketball, and for us, baseball, like revenue sports, right, drive a lot of the decisions. But in college athletics, those monetary benefits have not been pushed down to student athletes. Right, the economic benefits of student athletes have not directly felt that. Now, I hope they feel it in the resources we provide, but when it comes, that's why NIL is so important, because they're like, yeah, but I haven't been able to directly benefit like money in my hand.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's why there's so much pressure on NIL, because for so long we've been reactive to not allowing student athletes to benefit, right, off of the value that they bring. Mm-hmm. And I think we've been afraid because we're like, well, can you do that and still have amateur sports? Yeah. Can you do? But we're the reason why people are upset with college athletics, because you got people who have been exploited. You got all the control that's been localized in one place. You, I mean, we collectively are responsible for that. Right. Mm-hmm. So we need to change it. But like, let's be honest, like this is why I love Vanderbilt. Come on, exploit people. Mm-hmm. You got a chance to get a world-class degree, have a world-class experience, and walk out here with a toolkit that's going to prepare you for life in every way, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that you have high-quality resources that will allow you to do that. That is not exploitation.
Mm-hmm. No.
But a lot of people have been exploited, and a lot of them look like us.
Yeah.
And that's real.
That's real.
That's real. And so there are all these threads, right? So it's not just about NIL.
Yeah.
It's more about like, what do we want to be known for as an enterprise? Just entertainment. I remember when, you know, several years ago, right, when Colin Kaepernick's taking a knee, people had all their feelings about that, right? People were on all different sides of the argument, you know.
Yeah.
And the women's basketball team wanted to take a knee during the national anthem. People were pissed about, right? Yeah. They felt very strongly about, right? And so one of the things that we did, I'll never forget this. I was actually on a Saturday getting ready to drive to Alabama for a family wedding. I'm from Alabama, drive to a wedding. And David Williams was like, we got to go and talk to the basketball team because they're thinking about taking a knee. And so I was almost late for this wedding. I go and we spend a couple of hours, but it was such an incredibly educational opportunity for these young women to just sit around and talk about their why. And the thing so it's like, we can't stop you from taking a knee, and we're not actually here to stop you. What we want to do is empower you with information, though, because you got to know that everybody's not going to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody's not going to agree with you. And some people are going to think you're trying to disrespect the military. They made it clear that they weren't, but it didn't matter. Some people are going to feel how they feel
exactly.
Right? You know, I'm pro-military, but like I didn't take it as disrespect. And I asked my dad what he thought about it. He was like, look, man, we fight for this country so that people can do what they think is best and stand up for what they believe, right? So we say to these kids, here's the biggest thing, is that we're responsible, though, for you. And what you need to know is that everybody's not going to like it. So what are you going to do when that happens? Just be prepared. Right? They might come after you on social media, they, you know, whatever. I want you to feel like you can talk about your why. And then we said, and then want to challenge you to how do you then go from the knee to taking action, right? Take the knee if you want. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, boo, you know, they're getting booed in their own gym. I mean, it was really incredible. I walked into the media room And there was a woman in there who I've known for years and years and years, and she was so nasty to me. And we had a conversation, and she just couldn't, but I can't believe you let this happen. And she's crying, and she's, I mean, just, and she's having a whole emotional meltdown. And I was just trying to get some water, right? I was like, oh, hey, how you doing? And yeah. She had a whole situation going on because she felt personally wounded. And so I knew that people were going to be wrought with emotion on this, right? So we endure that. So one of the things we did the next week is that we were getting ready to play another game, and it was a doubleheader. And in between the men's and the women's game, we had like a forum upstairs and said to all fans, hey, come in here if you want to, instead of just casting stones, and why don't you come have a conversation?
Yeah.
Why don't you hear from these young women why this is so important to them, right? Why this matters. And so they began to share their experiences. And I would say that, you know, many people were moved by, you know, again, when we can like put all the nonsense down and just connect as humans, good things always happen, right?
Every time. Yeah.
But I remember this one man who had been coming to games, since I played. And he said, I can't believe that you would come in here and you would have your own personal agenda. He's saying this to the girls. He said, when it's your job to entertain us. And I'm telling you, it took everything in me. Right. And I was not the athletic director now, but I wanted to fight this man. I'm not going to lie. I was and that, you know, I felt it on every level. Right.
Yeah.
As a black woman, I felt it. He was opposite of that. Mm-hmm. Right. And he is a pretty privileged person. And for him to say that to the.
Yeah.
And he said it right when a young woman was talking about her brother getting stopped by the police and what he had experienced. And we had just had that conversation with our son. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me on so many levels. And he called her entertainment.
No fear.
And part of, and I say all of that to say, because part of what's happening is that we have treated it sometimes like people are commodities or this is just entertainment. Mm-hmm. This is education, where sports is being used as a vehicle. Right. Mm-hmm. And that vehicle could take you so many places, to professional baseball, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's still, we're talking about using sport as a vehicle to open doors and provide access and opportunity. That's what it is. And we have done a bad job of not talking about those values. And so we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But the thing that I know is, man, that ain't who Vanderbilt is, though.
Yeah.
And so if anybody can help lead the change, it's us.
On a lighter note, I guess. I guess real quick. Yeah, I'm gonna go there. I want to hear Mount Rushmore. I'll just say three. We'll go three.
Oh.
Three. I'm not going to make you go five. Three Mount Rushmore Vanderbilt athletes in your mind. It is your opinion.
Oh my goodness.
There's a lot. Yeah, I'm just gonna do three.
I don't know how to do this. I'm gonna have to say Perry Wallace.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to put Perry Wallace on there.
Yeah.
Golly. Let's go. And athletes, right?
Athletes.
Three is troubling.
I mean, I am troubled by this question, but okay. I'm definitely going to feel good about Perry Wallace. Uh-huh. Let me go on a smooth throw a woman on there. Yeah, you know, got to. I'm going to have to go with probably Teresa Phillips.
Okay.
First black female athlete at Vanderbilt.
She on there.
She got to be on there, you know, and she went on and she just was inducted in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, and she is just incredible. So she's got to be on there.
Yeah.
Man, and so this third spot.
Yeah.
I mean, will this third spot go to a pioneer?
Impact.
Will this third spot go to... Oh, y'all.
Go ahead.
Hit him.
Somebody got to be left off.
I mean, you know, many,
a lot of people got to be left off.
But no disrespect.
No, it's not disrespectful at all.
And it's got to be. Listen, this is what I'm going to do. I'm gonna put myself on there looking like there this. Looking like I'm representing all of us who. Yeah. And listen, this is the only reason I'm gonna put myself on there. Because I wasn't a good athlete. I'm putting myself on there so I can represent David Williams and Tim Corbin. And do I need to go on and on? I mean, so I can represent, y'all don't know this name probably, but Stella Vaughn. So Stella Vaughn, Stella Vaughn grew up on this campus. Her father was a professor. And she would kind of sit in classes. I mean, when Vanderbilt opened now, she would sit in classes, couldn't really go to class. Yeah. But she had women playing basketball here in the late 1890s. Oh. And if it wasn't for Stella Vaughn, then there would not be female athletes here. Right. So only reason I can't put her, I was going to say her, but she wasn't an athlete.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put myself on it. But simply with this look of like, come on, y'all.
Yeah.
I'm really for all these people. I'm going to be holding a piece of paper that has all the people all right,
that
should be.
We got the graphic.
You understand
that graphic?
The graphic, right? And really, so it ain't about Candace, but the thing that I know is like, if you give me an opportunity, I'm going to prop up all the people that need to be propped up and just have significant gratitude for the opportunities that we have. And so I'm going to make sure that those people get props.
Yep. Rightfully so. Great answer.
Well, it's a very uncomfortable answer, but I don't know what to say.
Hey.
But that's how we gonna put the context around.
Yeah, I like that.
You see? You see?
I like that.
Well, this has been great. This is it. This has been great. Really appreciate you coming by and blessing the mic. This was good. More than good.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed
this one.
And I'm so proud of you. And happy birthday. Yes,
thank you.
Birthday boy.
Birthday boy.
Yeah. Well, people, that's it. We're going to get out of here.
Share, comment, subscribe.
All that. And stay tuned to Vanderbilt Athletics this season. All seasons.
Hey.
All right.
Starting off hot. 1-0, baby.
They undefeated, baby.
Undefeated.
All the way around in soccer.
Look at that.
In football. Yeah. Undefeated.
We here.
That's right.
All right. We out.
Peace.
It is.